It's time for Wealth DNA with Ron the Ronald Naraki. It's time to check your Wealth DNA so you can enjoy the second half of life. Here's the host of the show, Ron Naraki.
We're honored that you're joining us today. Whether you're on the East Coast and you're starting to think about lunch, you're on the West Coast sipping a cup of coffee, or you're in Europe and you're trying to review a few more emails before heading home, or if you're listening to the archive of the show someday in the future, I'm sure you'll be glad you joined us. Now, I've got a lot of questions for our guest today, and we also welcome questions from you, our live listeners. I certainly hope our listeners living in the U.S. and U.S. citizens around the world had a great Thanksgiving Day feast here recently with the traditional foods as well as family and friends gathered around the table. The most important aspect in my mind is one that's being less emphasized around many Thanksgiving tables and should actually be the central focus, discussing the many blessings we should be thankful for, and we are thankful for, not just the family and food and friendship, but so much more. I certainly am thankful for my health, my mission to help others live the American dream, and living in a country where I have freedom of religion, speech, to bear arms, as well as controlling my financial destiny through property ownership and business ownership, which we'll be talking about a little bit today. If you don't fully appreciate these blessings, we could see many of them gradually disappear, and certainly actions by the U.S. government to increase regulations, manipulate the financial markets, monitor our conversations, correspondence, and transactions are very clear warning signs. My vision for Thanksgiving Day includes thousands of people thankful for the Wealth DNA radio show as a free and readily accessible means to increase their Wealth DNA and build their wealth. That would be a major step toward our goal, which is to help a million people become millionaires. At the end of today's show, I'll share more about my mission to help others live the American dream. I'll also share my definition of the American dream, as well as what I fear the U.S. government's definition has become. Incidentally, since our last show, I read a book about that most teenagers should actually read, and I didn't know about it until recently, The Richest Man in Babylon. It's a very short book, a fable, but nonetheless has many of the life lessons essential to building your wealth. During the summary of the show, I'll tie in today's topic to that book. I also attended an excellent two-day meeting organized by Weiss Research to focus on what they foresee for 2014. They had some great guest speakers in that program. My favorites included Arthur Laffer, and you may remember that name, Doug Davenport, Larry Edelston, but I certainly learned a lot from each of the 10 presenters. In those 2 weeks, I also received an excellent summary of the top 20 trends for the next decade. And if you remember John Mesbitt's Megatrend books, do you remember those? You would certainly appreciate the information as much as I did. Now, I plan to share a little of each of those trends, some of the upcoming shows, and also from that two-day seminar. So much to share, so little time. Now, I don't want you to think that everything being presented by these trend followers, economists, investment gurus is either useful or even true. I have to share the number one example that belongs in the Wealth DNA Hall of Shame. Robert Shiller, a Nobel Prize-winning economist, came up with a really dumb idea recently. His proposal is that everyone should have access to a financial advisor. And for those who can't afford to pay for a financial advisor, you and I, the taxpayers, would pay the cost of those financial advisors. It was such a dumb idea, I had to submit a comment on it, suggesting that there are many free resources and many more nearly free resources you can get in your public library that everyone has access to. If people spent less time watching mindless TV shows and took advantage of those resources, including the Wealth DNA radio show, they'd be able to afford financial advisors if they still needed one. Now, paying for someone's education or coaching does not mean it will be successful. Very often, what we receive for free, we value as much as we paid for it. So yes, there are some dumb ideas out there. And the more I see, the less faith I have in the Nobel Prize committees. I guess in Robert Shiller's defense, I should paraphrase my mother outlaw, who said something similar to, there are enough different opinions that each of us can have our own. So he shared his opinion publicly. Doesn't mean the rest of us have to agree with him. Now, our topic today is true self-directed IRAs. Our regular listeners may recall in June of 2011, we had J.P. Dada on, who at that time was president of Ventrust Arizona, sharing a lot of good information about these true self-directed IRAs. I, of course, remember the date well, since the very next day, my office and part of my home burned. It's one of those occasions that will stay with me for the rest of my life. Today we have another expert join us whose expertise is actually helping real estate investors take advantage of all of the appropriate technologies and financial instruments available. In many ways, his mission is very similar to the mission of the Wealth DNA radio show, to inform and educate investors. I'll be introducing Andrew Waite very shortly. I'd like to take just a minute or two to put these true self-directed IRAs into perspective. First, today's topic is very relevant to the series of shows we've been doing on alternative investments. Very often, one of the reasons investors don't take advantage of alternative investments is that they have funds available in their IRAs, 401ks, or other tax-advantage accounts. The administrators of those accounts tell the investors that alternative investors are not investments are not permitted within those accounts, and certainly our listeners who are members of the 2% Club know that just isn't true. Our mission today is to induct many more members to that 2% Club. The second point I'd mention is that IRAs and 401ks have been controversial over the 30 years or so since they've been in prevalent use, and I've certainly used them at least that long. My perspective, which is shared by about 50% of financial advisors, is that all savers and investors should take full advantage of these accounts. They allow us to reduce our current taxable income and allow us to grow our investments on a tax-deferred or tax-free basis. Now, we generally expect income tax rates to be lower when we're no longer working for money, so the money in those accounts can work for us and we can withdraw and pay taxes only on the amount we need each year. And once we're retired, we'll be able to even better control our taxable income than while we work for money. The other half of the financial advisors will tell investors to never use these tax-deductible and tax-deferred IRAs. They state that tax savings today will be minimal compared to the amount of tax you'll be eventually paying on the money that you withdraw. So you're much better off either putting money into tax-free accounts, there you'll never have to pay taxes at all in the future, or just pay taxes today and pay taxes as your portfolio grows. So these advisors are telling us that the privilege provided under U.S. tax law is actually a trap, a way to extract more of your tax dollars. Who do you believe? Now, I already stated which court I'm in. I take full advantage of these IRAs and we'll cover some tips on our next show when I share some ideas to manage your 2011 income taxes. Today is December 9th, 2013. It is 9:08. My goodness, time flies. In Arizona, 11:08 on the East Coast, and 17:08 in continental Europe. It's the only day ever like it. We'll do everything possible to make it a great one. You're listening to the Wealth DNA Radio Show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki. The show airs every second and fourth Monday at 9 a.m. in Arizona. Now, I certainly hope you can join us each time we air, but if you miss a show, like the earlier one on self-directed IRAs I mentioned, you can find out in the archives. Just go to wealthdna.us, where we list each of the shows, both upcoming and archived. Now, we welcome your questions and comments during the show. We recommend you use the chat window. And in that chat window, you can put in your comments, your questions. We'll see them and be able to add them in. Or you can call in 917-388-4162. It's also shown at the top of the screen. Now, by the way, the U.S. equity markets, which ended last week near their record highs, are off to a positive start. Asia was up with Japan over 2%. Europe was, which will just be closing here soon, was up slightly, and Brazil is up. Optimism everywhere. Let me introduce our special guest today. It's Andrew Waite. He's the publisher of Personal Real Estate Investor magazine. He was born in New Zealand, started his career in aviation product liability law. So whom he probably knows a little bit about law, as well as the topic we'll talk about today. He worked 17 years in senior marketing, sales, and executive roles in technology startups and VC companies, which we've talked about in this show, and they were based in Texas as well as Silicon Valley. He's an expert in sales and marketing automation processes, sports marketing, sponsorship, and, of course, investment. Andrew also worked with Arthur Anderson in customer engagement relationship management systems. He has been involved in three successful publishing companies since 1987. This is his third. Personal Real Estate Investor magazine was started in 2003 and his ninth title. So he has a bit of experience in publishing. Andrew's been a real estate investor as well since 1992. He's based in the Phoenix, Arizona area, but many people he assume he lives elsewhere since he's meeting with investors and holding events all over the world. Let's give a warm radio welcome to Andrew Waite. Welcome, Andrew. Thank you for joining us today.
Ron, good morning, and thank you so much for that.
I gave a brief. Well, I'm doing pretty well. I other than freezing, us in Arizona, we're not used to this kind of weather, right? I gave a brief overview of background. How do you introduce yourself to people that?
Well, I worked in the law, so essentially I'm a recovering lawyer. I worked at Anderson a couple of stints there. Mm-hmm. What my main experience is was in both of those cases ending up with clients and working with clients in technology companies because, as you can well imagine, most technology companies, by virtue of the fact they're technology-centric, end up being driven by technology people that tend to have less of an understanding, obviously with the exception of people like Steve Jobs, of what ultimately their market is all about. And that has been mainly my direction. So when you look across the body of work I've done, whether mm-hmm. it be in publishing, whether it be in sports marketing, whether it be in venture capital, whether it be in selling customer relationship management consulting or whatever, it's always going to the root of the customer need and trying to translate that into return on investment and the impact on dividends if they're a public company or profits if they're not a public company. Not to say that public companies don't want profits, but that leads to the dividend. But it's always translating what they do into something practical.
Excellent. By the way, our topic today is true self-directed IRAs. Now, some of our listeners may wonder, if you were born in New Zealand, how can you know something about U.S. pension vehicles? How would you answer that concern?
Well, I've lived in the States for 40 years, but when you look around the world, most of the major Western societies have some sort of pension vehicle, either national pension vehicle or laws that focus at tax-deferred income. New Zealand, KiwiSaver, in Australia, it's superannuation. I don't know the name of it of the current system in the UK. Canada has one. But they are effectively a self-directed model to allow people to put money into a fund and then allow them to actually self-direct it. One of the interesting things about the U.S. is that in all of these other countries, they're all monolithic governments and government regulation. So you have a national approach to it here because, particularly when you move into the real estate business, there are 50 different jurisdictions, all of which are, have sufficiently different variants of it. The
Correct.
Problem then arises here in the States is that because real estate is represented by the folks in each one of those 50 states, there is not a monolithic voice competing with Wall Street. So Wall Street has one, huge megaphone saying, securities are good, equities are good, et cetera, everything else is bad. What they're saying really is, trust us, we know how to earn commissions from your trade. And so the notion of self-direction and the whole, vehicle that was created in 1974 with the derivative tax regs are basically an anathema to Wall Street and any sort of brokerage or commission-based financial advice because they cannot earn commissions in these alternative assets that many people start to put into these self-directed IRA accounts. So I've been here for 40 years. I was blown away when I discovered self-directed IRAs about 10 years ago and was amazed that they were, had been around so long and very few people were taking advantage of them.
Exactly, and I think you've touched on a couple of the reasons that they aren't known very well. Now, Personal Real Estate Investor Magazine and Nexus Publishing are not your first rodeo. How did you get involved in a magazine related to real estate investing?
At the time, well, how did I get involved in magazines first? I was reading a magazine about the industry that I was in, and there was an article written by some writer on the subject that I was, you know, deeply involved in. We were developing and building call centers for large airlines, telemarketing companies, etc. And the article had been written by a junior writer who knew nothing about the subject, but had been asked to write an article. And effectively, they had written nonsense. They'd attached the foot bone to the head bone, and anybody with any knowledge of the market immediately saw the magazine, and more specifically, the article is incredible. So I called up the publisher and I said, look, you've got a problem here, but I'm not just going to call up and tell you you've got a problem. I'm going to offer a solution. I will write that article every month. And he was thrilled because he now got a free writer who had some expertise in the area. Well, I was running marketing for this company, and we became the dominant player in the marketplace. We were given the credibility, obviously, of this recurring article. And I got promoted through, so I ended up as president running this company. So we sold that company, and the guy that I was writing for said to me, have you ever thought of being a publisher? And I said, no, I know nothing about it. And he jokingly said, I can teach you in 3 weeks. So I found myself in New York involved in publishing and found exactly the same problem that I was talking about when I was talking about marketing. You know, they had a great idea. They didn't quite know how to articulate it as a value for their readership, and so we, you know, proceeded to reorient the business and, you know, raise our profile and so forth. And that business was sold to United Publications in 1997 as the fourth largest print deal in the U.S. And then we went off and launched another magazine company that wrote a magazine called Technology Investor, which was a NASDAQ book. And what we did is we looked at NASDAQ stocks like we had looked at the computer industry and related areas, and we analyzed the stock with the same critical nature you would expect of a writer in the technology business. Well, of course, Wall Street was just astounded that we would call their ugly IPO baby. We would call it out as an ugly baby because every IPO they bring to market as either advisors or market makers is absolutely perfect. Well, we found, because of our background, a lot of that stuff, when you looked at, say, something that was dependent on telephone companies, for example, to bring to market, and they didn't expect to deploy the underlying infrastructure to support this technology for another 5 years, why would you invest short-term in a company that had whose destiny was controlled by somebody that was, you know, well beyond their control and so forth? So we started, we approached it like that, and it just shocked Wall Street. But one of the things that was really interesting is that readers loved it. And as a result, in about 8 months, we had 350,000 individual investors with half a million or more of investable assets. Wow. So I and my naivete go down to Wall Street and say, hey, guys, we've got 350,000 individuals with half a million or more of investable assets. They're smart, they're bright, they want stuff. And the response was, please don't bring them to us unless they want to give us $200 a month to stick in an IRA, because they're going to ask us and demand of us certain skills and expertise that we really don't have. And we prefer not to deal with, self-directed, bright investors, because they actually just increase our overhead in turn trying to serve them. So if you can get them to contribute $200 a month to a passive IRA, we'll happily do business with them and hopefully make some money for them. But other than that, we're not interested. And it was absolute awakening to me. And we ended up selling that magazine. I came home to Phoenix and was sitting around, you know, we were all sitting around, my partners and I, and going, well, you know, what are we going to do next? And I started to suddenly realize after 9/11 and the dot-com disasters that my real estate hadn't been affected. And I went, that's weird. Why has real estate not moved? Whereas all of my equities and, you know, mutual funds, et cetera, have been trashed.
Right.
And so I looked at it and realized that it was a countercyclical asset, and I wanted to understand what that meant. I also discovered, when I started contrasting it to traded assets, that these non-traded real estate assets, one of the advantages was the fact it was not a conveniently traded asset.
Correct.
And then we started to, you know, understand lots and more about it. So I went back and proposed launching a magazine around individual real estate investment because I thought it had some significant upside and a significant market. Well, last week, I was at the Information Management Network conference here in Phoenix, Rio to Rental, and there were all the major institutions in the mutual fund business in New York, all just stumbling over themselves to get a piece of the single family rental industry. So what, you know, average Americans have been doing for hundreds of years and investing in rental properties, it's now gone institutional. Not to the expense of the individual, however. I mean, it's going to remain very much a asset class, if you will, that anybody can invest in, whether you're individual, small cap, mid cap, or large cap.
So you criticized Wall Street, and now they're visiting you.
Well, I mean, it's not an issue of Wall Street. There's a lot of reasons to criticize Wall Street, but there's a lot of reasons to criticize the real estate industry also. I mean, they're both very dysfunctional. The problem really is, though, it comes back to the individual investor. There's nobody out there that looks out for your interests better than you do. And, you know, it's all very well, this hands-off investing and hands-off property management, property investing and all this stuff. It's a little bit of a pipe dream. You really have to understand it's all about, you know, it's hands-off, but it can be hands-off, but it better be brain-on. Because if you're not following what's going on, you're going to miss, and people will take advantage of you.
Fair enough. Before we forget, could you give our listeners contact information for your website or the magazine so they can find out a little bit more about it?
So the magazine is Personal Real Estate Investor Magazine. And the website is www.personalrealestateinvestor, that's with an O-R, mag.com.
Correct. So just the magazine is shortened. Excellent. Some of our listeners are multitaskers. Now, you did a special edition.
Go to any Barnes & Noble around the country and many airport newsstands, and you'll find it in the business section.
Very true. Very true. And one of the key things is that in that magazine, you recently had an edition, a special edition, talking about these self-directed RIAs. And you had made this probably the most comprehensive review I've seen ever done. So congratulations on that. So I'd like to cover some of the aspects. We're not going to be able to cover all of it, but in that article, you had a matrix or a table that posed a number of different questions related to these IRAs, and I thought that would be a great framework for following. And the first question you posed is what? So let's start with that, and I'm sure in the majority of our listeners, especially those in the U.S., recognize when we say IRA, we're talking about individual retirement accounts and not some political opposition group, and that when I mention self-directed IRA, I add in the word true self-directed IRA to contrast it with what the Wall Street companies will call self-directed. What are some of the big differences between that self-directed IRA that Wall Street talks about and the true self-directed IRA?
Well, I have been on the management side of a company that offered IRAs to their clients, to their staff, and all the benefits associated with it. And what the financial advisor we had, I think it was MFS or somebody like that, their notion of self-direction was giving you an option of three or four different funds along with a company stock, right? So it was their idea of self-direction actually was choice, but it was limited choice. And obviously, you know, limited to products that they made money either promoting and or brokering. So it was not truly self-directed in any way, shape, or form, short of, you know, here's four choices, multiple choice, choose, you know, three of four or something. But you can only choose the four, one of the four, or three of the four. You couldn't choose anything that fell outside of their idea of a plan. So that's their notion of self-directed.
Exactly.
Self-directed in the legal sense, as you know, described in the 1974 regulation or act and regulations, is allowing the client to invest in everything they can that is investment grade, short of collectibles, antiques, a couple of other sort of strange alternatives, but if it's precious metals, coins, real estate, any of the non-traded asset classes, they're all available. And that's the sort of notion of self-direction and choice. You know, and you can even still choose equities. I mean, it's not at the expense of traded assets. It's both.
All right, so when a financial advisor says you can only invest in Wall Street products, you're telling us they either don't know the law or they're lying to us.
Well, it's not in their interest for them to lose dollars to real estate, because any dollar invested in real estate is lost to Wall Street's ability to manage it.
Now, before we need to move to the next broad question of why, let me remind our listeners you're tuned to the Wealth DNA radio show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki. I look forward to you joining us every second and fourth Monday. If you missed some of the prior shows, like the ones we did on alternative investments, you want to re-listen to them, we maintain an archive of shows on wealthdna.us. If you'd like to get an email reminder of the show, you can do one of two things. Send an email to me, ron@wealthdna.us. We'll keep you posted about future shows and events. Or in the upper left side of the screen, just under the Boomer and the Babes picture, click the follow button. They'll keep you posted on the great shows. Now, reminder, during the radio show, we welcome you and our other listeners to ask questions. The best is through the chat window. It is below the radio player on your screen. And the alternative is to call in 917-388-4162. Our topic today is true self-directed IRAs. We're discussing that with Andrew Waite, the publisher of Personal Real Estate Investor Magazine, who recently published an excellent special edition on this very topic. Okay, Andrew, let's discuss that next broad question, why? Now, most investors realize the reason for investing in IRAs is to postpone or avoid taxation. Why else would someone use an IRA?
The notion of using IRA obviously would be, and particularly the self-direction, is to be able to put in to the retirement plan products that give you higher returns with security. I mean, one of the things that you'll
right.
hear from folks that are detractors of self-directed IRAs is that asset classes that you can put into them as alternative asset classes just aren't that stable, or, you know, look what happened to the market, it's a risky market, blah, blah, blah. And truly, they're running on emotion, driven by the fact that they're not going to benefit from, you know, the buying and selling of these types of, yeah, exactly. So that's the sort of pushback you get, but it's based on ignorance. It's not based on anything other than that.
All right. And if I put my real estate investment into an IRA, I don't have to file all those attachments with my tax return. I don't have to do the Schedule E for those properties and depreciation schedules and none of those things, because it's a non-taxable account. So those sound
like
good reasons to do it. Now, and it's also a trust, okay? And that's one thing that's kind of forgotten under tax law. It really is a trust. And that provides us some asset protection as well, correct? So I am protecting that IRA from something that's happening in my personal life, correct?
That's exactly right. One of the things you will find when you start looking at real estate, though, as the alternative asset, and you compare it dollar for dollar and, you know, benefits, benefit for benefit with traded assets, what mm-hmm. you suddenly realize is that you can insure both the capital invested, and you can insured, the title of the property is insured, it's registered with a local county recorder. You can insure the capital of the property, obviously with a deductible against destruction. You can't insure the land, because the land
right.
under the title insurance is yours anyway. But the land doesn't, you know, cannot be destroyed short of a flood or something like that that washes away that portion of the riverbank you've got your house on. But you can insure against liability. You can bring in a property manager to manage any rental environment, and they bring in their E&O and their expertise to make sure that vacancies are minimal, that income is maximized. You can also buy rental insurance so that your revenue stream is insured. Just a whole series of things that when you take it across and compare, you know, a stock certificate, the revenues derived in terms of dividends, et cetera, none of those things exist in the, or seldom exist or exist as a shadow in the traded asset space. So these things are kind of ignored and nobody's really articulated them. One of the things that I benefit from here as a publication is having been on the traded asset side of publishing and knowing how that whole world works. Well, having an insight into some of how that world
Correct.
Works and then being able to compare it with the real estate business. But on the real estate side, I mean, the whole industry of real estate, unfortunately, is commission-driven too. And what you tend to find is that folks you speak to in the real estate business aren't very articulate in some of these issues we're talking about here.
No, that's a fair point.
I just want to...
No, definitely so. But, you know, within my IRA, you focus on real estate, obviously. What are the kinds of things I can put in an IRA? I mean, I can't put my own house, obviously. That's one of those restrictions. But, you know, what can I buy in my IRA on the real estate front?
Income property. You can buy notes. You can flip property. You can buy land contracts. A lot of variants on the same principle, which is, you know, recorded asset that derives either income or appreciation from market movement.
Okay. And, you know, you triggered a couple thoughts I guess I should share with our listeners at the same time. First of all, in terms of the protection and the insurance and those things, also the trust does provide you a second. If your teenage son has a car accident, the L of your investments in the IRA are protected from that. So lawsuits are, you know, in essence, outside of that IRA are separated. So your teenage son will not, you know, ruin your IRA, which is a huge, huge benefit versus having that investment property in your own name where it could be attached by friendly lawyers. Not to badmouth the lawyers with somebody that has played in that game before. Then the other thing that you touched on is one of the things that some of the investment advisors will badmouth real estate. They say, well, it's not a registered security, so it's therefore not regulated. It's not, you don't really know what you're getting, et cetera, et cetera. What they fail to mention is the reason it's not a registered security, it's an exempt security. You have real assets.
it's just one of those arguments that's
forgotten.
And it's not a security in the sense that you're going to get paper evidencing a position in a company. I mean, that's
exactly
that's what you get when you invest in traded assets. Is you get, you know, evidence of it. Now, in the case of real estate, what is really important is when you compare $100,000 invested in real estate and $100,000 invested in the stock market. And this is a double-edged sword, so let's not just run away with and assume that, you know, I'm just a acolyte of the whole real estate business, because there are downsides, but there are ways to mitigate those downsides. First of all, $100,000 dropped into the real estate market is an expression of a position in that real estate. It is typically unless you're going to buy for cash and limit yourself to buying a $100,000 quality affordable home to rent to somebody, or a couple of $50,000 homes to rent to somebody, that $100,000 is far better employed as a deposit, as, you know, 30% or 25% of an investment. So suddenly you're actually controlling $400,000 worth of equity in terms of, or $400,000 worth of real estate in terms of, you know, two or three houses, and spreading your risk. Or you may have gone into multifamily, or you may have gone into notes or something like that. But the point is, on the case of hard real estate where you literally have title to the property, you can leverage that with conventional lending with you know, mezzanine lending, and even if you're doing flips and short-term deals with hard money, which would be against the property versus against the investor's credit capacity. But the point is, you get a lot more return for your dollar because your return is on the $400,000, not just the $100,000, as opposed to Wall Street, where the $100,000 is typically unleveraged unless, you know, you're a margin player and so forth. And you have the same problems with, you know, borrowing in the real estate business as you do with borrowing in a margin account, in that the property can go the wrong way and suddenly you owe more than the property is worth. But that's the exposure there. The second part
of the risk side of it, absolutely.
The second part of when we specifically talking about income property, you get real income. You know, you hear people talk about cap rates on income capitalization rates on real estate. You can literally sit down and work out how many years you have to derive income from the property to pay off the entire property. So, and all of your obligations, whether it's capturing back the deposit and paying off the mortgage, whereas if you go over and look at the dividend income on, you know, munis or bonds or a stock that pays dividends, it's trivial. There is, you know, if you did the cap rate calculation on dividends, it would be kind of embarrassing. So you're looking, you know, 8 to 10 years. Your income should be paying off your rental property. If you go over into the stock market and look at the income capitalization rate on a stock and the dividends, you know, it's 1,000 years.
Correct.
So,
it's
not even in the same, you know, scope. The third part of it is, of course, the fear of, you know, well, tenants, toilets, and turnover, you're going to have to manage these people. That's absolutely nonsense and scare tactics. In fact, it's far wiser to go out and invest in having a property manager do it. Maybe $75 a month, it could be, you know, $100 a month. But the point is, it's very, very cheap occupancy insurance, meaning they assure the property of being occupied and paying rent, for doing all the collections, doing any legal work, and, of course, having the E&O, errors and omissions insurance, to protect you from any slip and falls and, you know, fair housing issues and all that stuff. So all of those so-called liabilities, you're shielded from that, particularly if you've bought this property under an LLC that exists to the benefit of the beneficiary or the owner of the IRA. So there's a lot of bits and pieces to do that. And then, of course, there's all sorts of technical tools now to improve occupancy, to optimize income, to manage maintenance and reserves and all those sorts of things. So it's become a very, very sophisticated business. And we're going to take a little bit of credit for this because we've been the only people that sort of got to the space, started analyzing this stuff and talking like this. Now you see other people begin to talk about it, but you know they talk about it almost as parodying what we're doing, as opposed to being able to do the compare and contrast to the traded equities market.
No, fair point. Let me go back to the leverage piece for just a minute, because if I talk to my stockbroker, he'll say, no, in your IRA, you absolutely can't take leverage. You can't do a margin account even on stocks, and you obviously can't invest in real estate because they don't allow it. But how about in a true self-directed IRA? Can I do that leverage as well?
All day long.
That's a key point most people don't realize. Because Wall Street told them they can't, they don't realize the rules are different in a true IRA.
Well, there's two things that have happened. First of all, in the lending space, in a self-directed IRA that owns an LLC that owns the property, it must be non-recourse borrowing. Well, there's been a lot of people out there, you know, providing non-recourse lending because of the Chinese wall between the taxpayer and this tax-deferred account. And you can't suddenly oblige the taxpayer to secure the loan for the tax deferred account. So that has been around for a long time. The notion of non-recourse, and you can find non-recourse lenders, and their points are, you know, there's a point or two on top of conventional lending to get to that stuff. But it's very necessary. if you're
going that's just a key point. Again, one of those huge difference between true self-directed IRA and the self-directed IRA as appointed by the Wall Street firms. Now let's switch to the question.
I need to go through the next step in that statement.
Oh right, but you mentioned just the recoil. I'm sorry. You're good point.
So here's what's happened though. As of about 6 months ago, Cerberus, which is one of the big Wall Street, mavens of hedge fund operation, launched a non-recourse lending arm called First Key Lending. They are encouraging real estate investors to refinance rental portfolios, five or more doors, $500,000 or more in lending the requirements, mm-hmm. all non-recourse, and they love self-directed IRA LLCs because they see the self-directed IRA retirement LLC protected tax deferred as a sacrosanct investment. The self-directed IRA beneficiary who is making these decisions regarding where that IRA is invested has a far higher sense of compliance and respect for repaying loans than does a homeowner. So it's
very
kind
true.
Of interesting. That's what they're finding out. So there's a lot of people, beginning to validate this market on the Wall Street side because it's an asset that they can get much higher returns out of, the loan. They can get much higher returns out of in a much more stabilized market than they can on the stock market or, foreign exchange or whatever they're trading in.
I'm glad you added that. I was not aware of that. So I've got that. I made a note of that. I always learn something on these shows. People think I'm just kind of sharing information, but I clearly learn as well. But let me switch you to how. There's a kind of another broad question that was covered in your special edition. If I have a self-directed IRA, as it's called at Fidelity, Vanguard, or Schwab, how can I convert that to a true self-directed IRA? Do I just call Fidelity and say, hey, can you switch me over to a self-directed IRA, true self-directed IRA?
Well,
they've
tended to get out of that business mm-hmm. because they're not very good at the servicing of self-direction. So in the case of, I believe, Fidelity or Schwab, they have subcontracted or defer the actual self-direction and the custodial services to people that are very specific at that. Now, you mentioned a company that one of your previous speakers was associated with.
Yes.
You must be very, very careful when you select a so-called self-directed IRA company. If you are going with an administrator, meaning they are not a bank or they don't mm-hmm. have a charter, and they are merely an administrator, you're paying two fees to get that account managed. The administrator fee, who then must use a custodian. It is far simpler to go straight to a custodian who has the service and advice capability and eliminate the need for a third-party administrator. Most of the people that you meet, around promoting their services of self-directed IRAs, unfortunately, are administrators. And unless you're a custodian with a bank charter, not only are you adding a overhead to the actual process, but you are not regulated by the Comptroller of Banks and the IRS. You're merely regulated by the IRS after the fact. And that is not a strong supporting or compliance environment for an individual investor. So go to a custodian. Don't waste your time on a TPA. You'll pay more than you need.
Okay, before we dig in deeper, for the listeners that just tuned in, you're listening to the Wealthenia Radio Show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki. You can listen to the earlier portion on the archive, or if you missed prior shows, you can find them there, www.wealthdna.us. Today, our guest is Andrew Waite. Our topic today, true self-directed IRAs. And Andrew recently published a special edition on this very topic in Personal Real Estate Investor Magazine. Okay, Andrew, now if I want to start one of these true self-directed IRAs, do I have to start up by contributing the $5,000 a year and wait until it grows into real money?
Not at all.
Or can I roll over?
You can roll over. And you can just take your entire existing IRA or 401k and move it into a self-directed regulatory environment.
And you can move part of it as well. So you really
all or a portion. That's totally acceptable. And any of these custodians with service capabilities will show you how to do this. They'll walk you through it. They want to help you manage your money.
Okay, and obviously that rollover, and they're going to know those guidelines to make sure you're not triggering a taxable event or something.
Oh,
absolutely. The wrong way.
They're very concerned about both tax events and prohibited transactions.
Okay, and I guess we should add one more thing, which is if you're working for a company and you have a 401k and you're actively contributing to it, they may not allow you to roll over that 401k or only a portion of it. So it depends on your company's rules, but it's not an IRS rule or a regulation that doesn't allow you to roll over 401k. Your individual company may have policies around it. So
that'll be a collaboration with their advisor. That's probably a restraint of trade.
Okay. Now, you already started touching on kind of the which provider I would choose. You mentioned custodians versus administrators, and that's good. But, you know, how do I find these guys? I mean, how do I, you know, obviously your magazine is one of those, but if somebody doesn't have a copy of your magazine at this point, how do they find those true self-directed IRA custodians?
Just Google self-directed IRA custodians.
Okay. And ignore the ads at the top, which are from the Vanguards and the Schwabs and the big players in the traditional Wall Street definition that we talked about earlier. Okay. Now, I also know there are these solo 401k plans that businesses can set up. Can I do that within an IRA, within a self-directed environment as well?
There's quite an argument about which is the better way to go. The answer is superficially yes, but you need to do research and with a tax advisor who understands self-directed IRAs. Big warning here. A lot of these CPAs and tax advisors just don't like self-directed IRAs, not because they are bad, but just because they don't understand them and they don't keep up with the rules. They should, but they just don't. I mean, I even had a CPA as recently as 6 months ago tell me he didn't know why we even bothered with self-directed IRAs because it was simpler just to pay the capital gains and move on. And I'm sitting there going, does this man not, understand the miracle of compounding interest and the rules of the richest man in Babylon? Because that was totally counterintuitive.
Exactly.
But my conclusion was he was lazy. I mean, that was my conclusion.
Sure, it's not his money he's paying taxes with.
That's right. That's exactly right. But it was much simpler for him to manage that if somebody paid taxes.
Okay, so solo 401k is one of those things to look at. How about do I have the option of, I can have Roths and traditional IRAs and SEP IRAs and all of those things within the Wall Street firms? Can I do that also in the self-directed environment?
Absolutely. All the same rules apply. The real issue is, is it a IRA or is it self-directed IRA in a true sense of the word? And then once you're into the self-directed IRA in the true sense of the word, you then have a broader selection of assets that you can put into that with, obviously, the prohibited transactions and the prohibited types of assets such as collectibles, art, and stuff like that, which the IRS doesn't really consider as investment grade. I am not sure. This is something I've never asked, and I don't know the answer to this. Maybe this is something that if you had a traditional IRA and the advisor decided he was going to put a real estate based stock or real estate or direct ownership of real estate into the IRA, I am sure he could do that through either a private placement, a note, or some of those other things. The problem that has manifested itself and probably the biggest objection is, or two of them, is they don't know much about the asset class, and second of all, they don't earn commissions because you cannot just gratuitously pay a tax advisor or a financial advisor a real estate commission or fee because that's regulated by the Department of Real Estate and they don't have licenses that allow them to be paid. What we did see for a while there was some of the smarter financial advisory firms included somebody on their staff who had a real estate license, so they could be paid fees. I haven't heard of that recently because sort of they've all sort of, you know, gone back to their traditional business.
I'm not aware of it either, so I won't try to respond on that one. Obviously, something I can be checking on in the future. Now, what are some of the criterion I'd use in choosing between custodians? I assume cost would be one of those. Location, although do I really care about location or
you
most
can do
of the
stuff
done by internet?
You can do all of this stuff over the internet. I mean, it's you know the notion of local presence is. You know, do you go to your bank every day to make every deposit and every withdrawal? I mean, I've become so internet based on my banking services, and it's the same sort of thing. I don't get a lot of joy talking to the teller. I mean, that's not what our lives are about.
Yeah, but you and I both have a little bit of gray hair, and so people would assume we always just go to the bank. We don't use the internet, right?
There's an assumption some of us do that, but anyway.
The reality may be different.
Yes.
One of the things I guess I should mention, I always like to use the airline analogy, because when you ask people, you know, what criterion I should use in selecting, and if you ask them about airlines, they talk about frequent flyer miles, flight schedule, prices, those kinds of things, but they forget the most important thing, which is safety. We all kind of assume safety. So I assume in picking a custodian, their financial standing, any complaints against them or problems they've had, legal, those would be all worth researching before you make your final selection, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, we're not going to have enough time to discuss some of the other questions like where and watch out for and when, which are important questions.
But I have
I'm listening.
So that solution is that document is available, the self-directed IRA investor reviews document is available, and I think we're charging like $9.95 for it. It's a 60-page discussion.
Right.
By our advertisers, by the way, and what we know about self-directed IRAs could be put in a thimble. What they know about self-directed IRAs, obviously, is a significantly more. So what we did is we went out and said, look, we're going to do this investor study, and it's designed to educate people and gather up, 20, 30 of these people, administrators, TPAs, investment providers within the context of IRAs, and talk to them about what, how, why, what, et cetera, when, where, all those sorts of things. So we assigned articles to each one of these guys, and they wrote the article. We edited it and, put in brief, these are the lessons. So that document is available to anybody, and the way to get it is www.personalrealestateinvestormag.com, and go to the shop tab and look under supplements and special reports.
Shop tab. Okay, excellent. All right. That's,
shop,
so that's,
shop tab.
Yep. Exactly. Okay. So that's already one of the things I wanted to make sure we covered is that is the link to the website. People want to find out more, and also now they can actually pick up this edition, which is really does cover a lot of these topics very, very well. There's just no way in an hour we could cover that much information.
Right.
But, what I guess one of the key summary points that I'd want to highlight and get your agreement on is regardless of, where people decide to invest or, exactly when they do it and those kinds of things, the broader range of alternatives they can do within their true self-directed IRA will give them a huge diversification from the Wall Street alternatives that they've probably been dealing with so far, correct?
Yes, and here's something that's very important. We've just gone through a so-called slump in the market, right? And that slump started in 2008, and it probably shore off about 40% of single-family real estate investment value. If it was an income property, a rental property, generating market income, the property value did not understand that it was still generating income.
Correct.
And that income, if provided the property remained rented, was constant through that downturn. That property, the home price index, has now almost returned to mean almost everywhere in the country. So if you picked a B or better house in a B or better neighborhood with a B or better rental income, your house didn't care what it was worth because you were generating that income, you know, and capitalizing that income rate and still paying off the house no matter what the value is. Because typical rental purchases are buy and hold. And that hold often mitigates, you know, ups and downs in the market. And I will tell you, when you look back at history in this market, the average appreciation, no matter what, always modulates out at about 4 to 5%.
Correct.
Inexorably over all years, even the down years. And that goes back to 1929 when we started tracking this data.
Exactly. And it gets back to your point you talked about back in the even the late 1990s when you talked about it as countercyclical. But on the other hand, not just countercyclical, okay, we've had some periods where they've kind of followed. But as you said, if you've got the cash flow coming in, you don't need to sell, you don't care about what the value is today. Because you know it's going to be higher later on.
And you mentioned Robert Shiller and his suggestion.
Yes.
Fund. He's one of the worst people for real estate because what he's doing is mark-to-market analysis and of about 5% of the market, or it's in fact even worse than that. It's only about it's less than 1% of the market per month, and he's trying to impute the entire value of a city like Phoenix based on a sample of like 4,000 houses and sale pairs, and his math. Is just the way he does it. His statistical analyses are just scary and make no sense at all. Yet he was the only one doing it, and by virtue was defined as an expert, and he was the headline every month of how bad the market was because XYZ had happened. So not a particularly helpful person under any circumstance.
Now, I have to just one tongue-in-cheek question I have to ask you is you talked about this person that wrote the article. It was terrible. You contacted the editor. That's what you got in the whole publishing business. I'm hoping that wasn't Robert Shiller that wrote that article.
No. It was in a technology space.
But there, although so it just proves there are bad people in every sector.
Well, remember, he's an academic, and it's publish or perish. And he has to, you know, he was the irrational exuberance guy about 5 weeks before Alan Greenspan picked that up. And
correct.
He was analyzing the technology market 5 weeks, 6 weeks ahead, and he felt there was some, you know, exuberance in it that was overstated. But he was only 5 weeks ahead of the crash, yet he is credited with, you know, forecasting the crash. Years earlier, about 10, 15 years earlier, he was trying to make market in California wines and create an index about California wines. So this guy's for years been trying to create indexes that somebody will pick up and publish. The problem with Shiller is the Case-Shiller Index is used by Macro Markets, which is a fund fortunately, it's not doing very well, that trades in future value of real estate indexes.
Mm.
He is one of the owners of that fund. So, you know, he's making money on the publishing and he's making money on the trade. So I just people don't point that out a lot, but Robert Shiller's a little bit conflicted. Let's just leave it at that.
Exactly. Andrew, we've covered a lot in this show. Obviously, we can't cover all of the aspects that you've covered in the magazine. Appreciate that that tip that we can get a copy at $9.95 or whatever it is on the shop tab of the magazine website. What are some of the key points you'd either want to emphasize or maybe add related to these true self-directed IRAs?
Get curious. Go ask people lots and lots of questions. And understand from what their answer based on their agenda, and then do your own vector analysis and come up with a conclusion. I think self-direction is a unsung and underappreciated strategy, and when you apply the change in strategy and you use real estate, wisely bought real estate from wise advisors, your returns are probably double that of Wall Street. Your security is huge compared to a Wall Street product, and you can insure just about everything from capital to income.
Fantastic. Really appreciate you having you on this show and taking the time to meet with us. You did a great job, not only on that special edition, but I'm now going back to all of my past editions that I have stacking up here of the magazine. And as I recall, like the magazine subscription is only about $30 a year for U.S. residents, and I don't know, it's probably...
$98.95.
Okay, and then even internationally, it can be ordered as well. We're talking about $75, $80 or something like that for somebody, people
If you're on an iPad or an Android or any tablet, it's only $19.95.
Yeah, that means I have to carry that thing around all the time and reach. But okay, understand. So you really have a couple different options, both the paper version, which I still prefer, and obviously cost more to mail, and the electronic version. So super. Really appreciate the time, Andrew, and hopefully
you'll
join us again on other topics in the future.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much. God
okay,
bless.
Good talking to you. Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Let me do a quick summary here. We've indeed covered a lot related to true self-directed IRAs, so I'll just take a couple minutes to summarize some of the key points that Andrew made. And let me tie them into the book that I mentioned and he mentioned as well, The Richest Man in Babylon. Nearly all of the advertising and marketing you see in IRAs is done by the Wall Street firms using the money from the commissions and fees that investors like you and I would pay to attract more investors. Ponzi scheme, huh? So you wouldn't be surprised if Wall Street is telling you this is what IRAs are, and you can't do things like alternative investments, and that includes real estate, commodities, precious metals, managed futures, private. I mean, we've talked about this over the last year in a great detail on this show, but the Wall Street companies don't want you to know you can invest in them. So don't be surprised. They tell you you can only invest in funds, investment funds, stocks, and bonds. Now, if you ask them about setting up a margin account or using leverage in your IRA, they tell you it's not allowed. And they may even tell you it's not allowed under IRS law. Now, you can debate whether the investment advisor lied to you or they just didn't know the regulations. But very few people know that you can use leverage within an IRA. There is something we didn't talk about, which is UBIT. We'll talk a little bit about it on our next show, the unrelated business income tax. But don't let that scare you. Using leverage in your IRA still may make sense for you. Now, earlier I referred to the 2% Club who know about true self-directed IRAs, and now after hearing this show, you are officially inducted to the 2% Club. As regular listeners, you know that only 2% of the population ever becomes truly wealthy. And it may just be coincidence that only 2% know about self-directed IRAs. Now, you certainly don't have to be wealthy to take advantage of these accounts, although the annual fees there are some annual fees, so a very small self-directed IRA may not be cost-effective. Our investors occasionally ask me, when does it make sense to switch over? And I usually use about $50,000 as a break point to move from just having a Wall Street IRA over to a true self-directed IRA. But, you know, there could be personal circumstances that change that. Now, if you read the book, The Richest Man in Babylon, you recall one of the key lessons is that you should keep at least 10% of everything you earn, and you put that money to work so it earns money for you, and its earnings earn money for you. Some people refer to this principle as pay yourself first. What if you took that 10% and put it into a traditional IRA? Not only would you avoid the temptation of spending it because it's put away and not accessible directly in cash today, but it would actually increase the amount of disposable income you have since you pay less in income taxes. Now, unfortunately, neither Arcad, the richest man, nor Agamish, the money lender who shared this principle with Arcad, had IRAs available to them. If you're a U.S. taxpayer, you certainly do. And as Andrew mentioned, many other countries have similar vehicles. Now, the final aspect I wanted to share with you today is that, let me touch on Agamish for just a second before I do that. Agamish, the money lender in that book, if he could have used a true self-directed IRA, he certainly would have. You see, the key aspect of the real estate fund I run, and one of the important considerations, is protecting those loans from lawsuits, lawyers, and other potential creditors. So an IRA would have been a perfect, ideal, I'd say, investment vehicle for Agamish had he had it available. So even the richest man in Babylon and his mentor could have done better if you know the tax rules today. The final aspect I want to share to you is a little bit about my mission. I mentioned at the beginning that I help others live the American dream. And owning your own home has always been a key component of the American dream, so many families lost their homes during the Great Recessions. Many of them are good people, did the right things, fell on hard times, either companies closed, jobs eliminated, or property values plummeted and they exited. Well, they would like to own one again. Well, my definition of the American dream is for the poor to become rich. And whether it's those families who want to own a home again, or investors who want to diversify their portfolio and increase their returns without taking on additional risk, my mission is to help those people, help them live the American dream. So now you know my definition to help the poor become rich. Now, my concern when representatives in the U.S. government talk about narrowing the income gap or the wealth gap, I fear their definition of the American dream is for the rich to become poor. That never was and should never be the American dream. Now, incidentally, I'm not implying that only people living in the U.S. can live the American dream. While I was living in Europe for 13 years, I occasionally mentioned to people that I'm living the American dream right here in Europe. Now, my personal mission is to continue to help our listeners live the American dream wherever they live by helping poor people become rich and helping the economy through that and helping the global village expand, that global village we live in. Now, as Arkad, the richest man in Babylon, mentioned to his friends, wealth is not a limited resource. The more you have doesn't mean that others have less. You see, if someone builds their ideal home on a vacant parcel of land, they spend part of their wealth and share it with the people who help them build it. They buy the materials, they pay the laborers, and the land goes up in value. And even after paying all of those people, the house is worth at least as much as they spent on it. So the money that they spent, they still have in the form of a house, and the wealth was distributed. So in other words, the wealth didn't go away, it expanded, a principle that's totally missed by governments. On our next show, we'll be sharing some tips related to your 2013 tax bill specifically, which will also help in your tax planning for 2014 beyond. We certainly can't cover every possible aspect, but with your help sending in questions or suggesting topics that are important to you, we'll try to make 2013 and 14 some of the best years ever for our listeners. Now, admittedly, I'll focus specifically on the U.S. tax laws, but certainly many of the principles apply in other parts of the world. For our listeners in other countries, it may be eye-opening to see how complex the U.S. tax code has become. Day after day, U.S. Congress seems to add complexity and not eliminate it. Remember, one of the best ways to increase your wealth, tune into the show twice a month. We share the investment fundamentals, share some great ideas, and help diversify and grow your portfolio. Certainly, today, fit that definition. The next Wealth DNA radio show will be the fourth Monday of December. That's Monday, December 23rd, 9 a.m. Arizona. Same place, same time. Now, we always have the lineup of guests and topics on wealthdna.us, and there you'll find the archive of past shows. If you have some comments on today's show, additional questions, suggestions, or maybe some tax topics you'd like us to address, or if you haven't received my emails reminding you about this show, just send me an email, ron@wealthdna.us. We'll keep you posted about future shows and events. Happy investing. And maybe that should include a true self-directed IRA.
You've been listening to Wealth DNA with Ron Naraki on Arizona Boomer Radio.
Arizona Boomer Radio is produced by the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated and can be heard Monday through Friday. You can sign up for their online magazine at boomerandthebabe.com. To reach the Boomer and the Babe, email host@boomerandthebabe.com or friend them on facebook.com/boomerandbabe. And on Blog Talk, you can friend them at blogtalkradio.com/boomerandbabe. Follow their tweets at twitter.com/boomerandbabe. Be sure to make the second half of your life the best half of your life. And remember, at 50, you're just getting started.
When you don't go to Geico.com,